Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for another doubleheader. Paris-Nice Stage 5, Tirreno Adriatico Stage 4. They both scheduled extremely similar stages today in terms of whether it could be a breakaway or a sprint, both long, but it's still a flat finish. We'll do Paris-Nice first, but they had better weather today. But just a quick note to remind those of you who are in the Benelux area, we are doing next Tuesday our Milan Sanremo preview live at the Flandrian Hotel in Brakel in Flanders. Benji and I getting back together there. And then on Saturday morning, the 16th of March, we're doing about a 50K group ride, including the Mur, which also starts at the Flandrian Hotel in the morning. And then in the afternoon, we're going to do a live watch along of Milan Sanremo, including the recap afterwards. So that's going to be a lot of fun. There are limited spots. It's free, obviously. Well, not obviously, but it's free. but there are limited spots. So to, I guess, reserve your spot, make sure you email luke@lanternrouge.com.au, luc@lanternrouge.com.au, to just put your name down. And then you'll get sent all the details from there once we have them. So if you're in the town, and we also have a special giveaway coming up. Stay tuned this weekend for that as well. So maybe don't make any plans next weekend if you're even in the southeast of the UK. Okay, Paris-Nice, Benji, it's a 200K stage, flat start before like a false flat climb, and then the Col de la Saucy climb, 2.7K is 5%. Descent, another false flat uphill drag, then the Col de Perrugue, 5.4K is 4.4%, and then another little climb, Côte de la Rochette du Buis, 2K is 5.3%, but everything between it is like false flat uphill that's uncategorized. So they go up to 1,000 meters eventually before a 40K false flat downhill descent to Sisteron. There's an intermediate sprint with Bonies, 6.42 at the finish line. Then they do 1K 6%, levels off, descent, and from there it's less than 10Ks to the finish from the top of that kicker. And so long day, hills before, five stages in, kicker 10Ks to the finish. To me, it wasn't an obvious sprint stage.
I think that's a viable preview of the stage. And yeah, it might not have been an obvious sprint stage. There's still quite a few sprinter teams in there, but they might also be thinking, okay, if we're going to take a look at who has a chance in the stage, we have as head candidates Olaf Koy when it comes to a sprint, Mats Pedersen when it comes to a more versatile stage if Trek decides to make it hard. And then we're looking at other teams where the likelihood of them winning the stage is not gigantic either. So they're going to be considering other options perhaps. And we did see a breakaway with some riders like Dries de Bont, for example, for Decathlon Age d'Isère. Those riders are doing both, as in they have someone in the breakaway, and they have Sam Bennett when it comes to the eventual sprint. So they are doing our probability thing, Patrick. We are also so proud of them.
And then you don't have to, instead of using De Bont to chase all day, you just put him in the break.
Exactly. Alexis Goujard for Cofidis. He's also in the breakaway. Matthijs Paaskens for Lotto, Sandy Dujardin and Pierre Latour of Total, and Matthias Norsgaard of Movistar. That's a starting breakaway of six, but that's going to be changing up a bit throughout the stage because, like you said, those climbs are there and there was one team using that, as in the gap was about 1 minute 30 when we hit that first of the three climbs in the middle of the stage, basically. And that is the Col de Perrugue. That's hopefully roughly how you pronounce it. And that's where Lotto made a move. They already had Paaskens in the breakaway and they decide to bridge from the peloton that 1 minute 30 gap with Campenaerts and Pascal Einkhorn straight up bridging from peloton to breakaway. So we get two riders joining that breakaway, a stronger breakaway with a team with three riders now. So that's quite a bit of an engine extra. It's not, they're not pancakes either. Campenaerts can ride pretty fast. Einkhorn can ride pretty fast. And at that point, did you believe in the breakaway?
No, because I think they then have to wait a little bit for them to bridge. They tried something. So this is a Campenaerts Enkhorn special, this move.
Yeah.
I feel like they did this in the tour last year. And by the way, it is interesting to see, like, when Lotto Destiny don't have a sprinter anymore, they throw everything at trying to win from the break. They actually try, like, really try. Because when other teams, we got closed down, it's like, well, then you see that, like, another team, like, they are trying everything. But yeah, the problem was, I know, yeah, Mads Pedersen said in the morning, oh, it was obviously a sprint. I don't care what happened 6 years ago. I don't think it was obviously a sprint.
Was this a stage where Paulit
he towed Jérôme Cousin to the finish and then he flicked him and won the stage ahead of Greipel, winning the bunch sprint in third.
Oh, okay.
So,
big memory.
But Pedersen said it was stupid to even brought up the stage to the interviewer. But apparently. But with those teams chasing, Trek, Bowman's been put there by Visma, Lisebuck, they got Coy, Israel probably want to go for Ackermann. There's just too many teams wanting to chase. And that's basically what happened. It's a long old day. And the function of this break, Benji, it creates later opportunities. So, like, whilst the break might not win, that doesn't mean it will be a sprint because the break was still so strong and was taken so seriously that the teams chasing had to kill their rouleurs. Like, and so you get to the base of this kicker.
Way.
And to me, it's still not obviously a sprint.
Fully agree. But there was one moment when it comes to that breakaway where I was like, Jesus, someone is pulling very hard here. That was when Victor Campenaerts went to the front of the group and he started ripping it with about 25 kilometers to go. And in doing so, Dujardin, Goujard, and Enkhorn got gapped. I don't actually know if Enkhorn got gapped because he was lacking the energy or because he was trying to like make the other two work to catch back on or something. It felt like a weird thing because then suddenly he was trying to go past them and go back to the original group. And then Paskens was all half of the back as well. So Campenaerts riding that fast basically gapped two of his own riders. Paskens then had to offer himself up to get Enkhorn back into the group. Goujard was fully dropped at this point. Dujardin got back. It was chaos in that breakaway when Campenaerts made that pull, but it's pretty epic to see, not going to lie. And the breakaway is reduced at this point. That wouldn't have impacted much a stage like you already mentioned. Like, we were going to see that break being caught eventually, because at this point we're talking about 30 seconds with 25k to go, and you set that hill coming up with about, what is it, 11k to go roughly?
Yeah.
Intermediate sprint at the foot. Bonus seconds are taken by the breakaway, so not by the peloton, so no sprint, for example. Were you surprised to not see Quickstep start pacing for Remco to get seconds or something?
A little bit, because it was sort of right there, you know? But I was more surprised not to see them pacing to like be in good position for the climb, you know, because it's you want to have Catania Vavaka there with Remco in front seven wheels as a presence, because who knows what could happen. Like, remember Vuelta, Roglic, okay, the Fred Wright stage when Fred Wright maliciously crashed him out of that Vuelta.
Get the fuck out of here.
Malicious. The learning from that stage, okay, forget the crash. That was a similar stage to me. I know that was closer to the finish, the kicker, but the peloton split apart. And suddenly there's Roglic jumping with Pedersen, who's here as well, and riders like Pithy, and they're working together, and it's a problem. So these sort of stages and that sort of climb, you do want to be careful. But the intermediate sprint, like probably a sprinter takes it or something anyway if you catch the breakaway. I guess not a big deal. But then they get to the climb.
I would have tried.
He does look much quicker than everybody else here.
And the reason I would have tried is that if we look at GC, you've got Remco, if I recall correctly, 3 seconds behind the first of the UAE riders.
Yeah, McNulty.
So 27, 28, 30, I think, are the seconds of the two UAE riders and then Remco. So let's be honest, Almeida's not the man that is in a good position at intermediate sprints most of the time. The Giro intermediate sprint days of Almeida are very far away. McNulty wasn't in position either. So if Remco had a train going into that, he would have gotten some seconds. And is it 6:42? If yes, then the first two spots would have gotten them over those UAE riders. So that would have been interesting. So I would have liked seeing that. But like you said, that climb's coming, shit's about to hit the fan, and it's when the brake is just about to get caught that we get those moves, right?
Yeah.
Bashir attacking over that breakaway. Squins, I think, bridging pace. I'm not sure about that one.
No, was Pedersen just closed it, I'm pretty sure.
What's sorry?
Pedersen just closed it himself.
Oh, yeah, it was Pedersen, sorry. For some reason, I keep forgetting that Pedersen is not in the green jersey.
But don't you think that's interesting from Groupama? That they don't have someone to do a great lead out in the final, so yeah. They get Pascher, because Pithy's not going to drop on this. Like, Pithy went with Vellens and yeah. Lascano and Van Aert on Mont-Saint-Laurent in Kerner. Yeah. So they use Pascher to almost do a reverse lead out, creates absolute chaos. Because I initially was like, why the fuck are Groupama FDJ doing that? But then, yeah, I mean, Nalti goes across. Jungels is closing it down. But no, Roglic in the wheel. I was like, has Jungels got an option on the stage here? And
mate, Vlasov was the move. Like, the base Vlasov went next. Fall, that's the thing.
But Pedersen goes across. And then suddenly it's four guys going for the stage, or five guys going for the stage. Pithy, Pedersen, Jungels. And then McNulty somehow in this move with the Ineos, De Plus, I think. Yeah. And then Remco's like, no, no, no. Or maybe McNulty wasn't even there yet. And Remco shuts it. I think he shuts it down once. And then it goes again, McNulty, Vlasov, and Ineos rider. And Remco has to close it down again.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because when Vlasov and McNulty are in those groups, you obviously Remco is going to start reacting. Because in this kind of stage, if he's in position, he should. And then you get to this moment of like, okay, we see the peloton stretch out. There's grabs every X amount of riders. Could this group actually keep going? And just like after every intermediate sprint, except for yesterday when he doubted a bit, Remco decides, let's give this a try. So he kind of moves to the front and starts spacing in a kind of descent area just after the climb, which probably didn't make it super effective, but somehow I felt like there was some possibility.
Don't you think it's like a defensive thing?
Like, I don't know.
He goes to front, keeps a moderate tempo.
I think it's cyclismo.
Okay. Well, yeah. Panache go for cyclismo. But it was interesting. And then all these GC guys have started trying to throw punches on this climb. Pedersen's had to do a big effort, which I'm not sure he had to do. Like, mm-hmm. I really think maybe a GC guy closes that down or someone else closes it down for him. But we saw him do it on stage one, Benji. He was the guy closing Remco, Jorgensen, and co. But like literally one rider was working in that group and they were about to stop working, but he just immediately like snap closes it. And and looks like it just all comes down. I was waiting for a big finesseur attack. Because everyone comes back. You see this huge momentum from the back. I'm like, someone's going to finesseur attack. Like Laporte like style. Yeah, that sort of stuff. He's not like someone like that.
If he was here.
like a ruler who's still kind of fresh because the climb's not a big deal for them. It didn't come. And so FDJ, Trek, Israel, they all set up shop and we're going to have a sprint. So it does end up being a sprint. I don't, and Tudor as well for Trentin because decline DNF'd, he got dropped early. It does end up being a sprint, but I don't think it was so obvious. And we're going into the sprint. We got Bennett, Coy, Pedersen, Ackermann, Pithy, obviously, Rajovic for Bahrain, Trentin, Lund Andersen, and Van Poppel even had a crack as well. And it was kind of a messy sprint again, Benji. I can't remember too much. What happened 3Ks to 1K to go?
So basically, Israel was on the front with about 4K to go. That's for Ackermann. Then Tudor took over for Trentin, like you mentioned. And between that 3 and 1 kilometer to go, it was basically a Jayco and Decathlon kind of switching who's at the front, because one Decathlon, one rider came to the front, did a bit of a lead out, and then the Jayco duo was behind that, but then kept going. And it's really in the pack I was looking at this point, because I was looking at where's Pedersen, where's Pithy, where's Coy, especially, because he's the fastest sprinter in this group on paper. And then you're asking yourself, oh, Pedersen, it's been a harder stage. Maybe that gives a benefit towards Pedersen here. So it was between those two in your eyes as well, because if you look at the group, Koiden suddenly is not in an ideal position. He's like, I'd say from the top of my head, about P12, roughly, in the middle of the group with about 700, 800 meters to go, maybe a bit further. And then he gets moved to the barrier to the right side because teams are waving him over him on the left. But then he very assertively basically worms his way diagonally through the group, not in a dangerous way. Gaps opened up. He gets through those gaps. He fights for those gaps. And he moves up to the left side. And then he's in like P7, while at the front we've got Little Trek doing their business. We're now into the last 500 meters and we see Gibbons doing a lead out for Pedersen in the next wheel. And then Piffy's kind of on the left side. And Koi is using Piffy to get to the front, right?
Yeah, he like moves him up, but then Koi kind of, I think Piffy stops. I think he's a little bit tired because he didn't have a good result today compared to the other sprint stages. Maybe because it was a flatter finish. But yeah, Pedersen opens up characteristically early. Ackermann's on his wheel, comes out of his wheel, hits the wind, moves up to about a wheel behind Pedersen and never improves from there. And Koi basically is first in that line, swings to Ackermann's wheel, and then swings further to the left and just has enough space on the left-hand barrier and wins the sprint by over a bike length easily in the end. But he may be a little bit lucky not to get boxed in and that it opened up, but also he seems to have that Philipsen-like sense, although not yesterday or today, that Philipsen-like sense to find that perfect opening. And with Pedersen going that early, he just, like, Pedersen's just holding that constant speed. He doesn't really slow down at all during his sprint. So
That's the thing, the difference between these riders. If Pedersen is that sprinter that, if you're Little Trek, you will see this in most of the sprints that they deliver Pedersen in, even at the Tour de France and so forth in the past. We've got a lead out. We're trying to bring Pedersen to the first possible position. And then Pedersen opens up and tries to keep that position against the sprinters that have higher acceleration that might not have had the perfect lead out and are behind them. That's what we see in most of the sprints where Pedersen is at, because the lead outs are actually pretty fucking good. But the thing is, Pedersen just doesn't have that acceleration, always has to start in the wind, hoping that his brutal strength is better than those acceleration sprinters that get past them eventually and then hit the wind and have something left to keep going. And, well, Koi is the best pure sprinter in this race. Pedersen is the best versatile sprinter in this race.
Yeah,
although
like the
Koi is relatively versatile too.
Well, the stages aren't hard enough for Pedersen.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful sprint by Koi. And I think we've mentioned this a few times before, but I feel like he's gone through quite a transition over the last 2.5-3 years where he really wasn't assertive back in the day. And more you would see him fighting for the positions, not losing positions to riders who were literally just like riding next to him back then. He's now getting them off the wheel, basically. So it's a real twist. He had that one stage where it was completely out of position, but that was more of a team thing, it felt like. When it comes to his individual positioning, it's on point these days. But I will say, this is not Tour de France competition when it comes to a sprint. So, I don't know. How would you rate the positioning fight in a Paris-Nice sprint versus a Tour de France sprint?
There's a lot of sprinters here. There are a lot of, but there's also the big ones at Tirreno. It's always a little bit, you know, the notch is dialed up a little bit more into the Tour de France, obviously. It does help with positioning. It's always going to be thinner after a hill in the last 10Ks like that. There's just going to be less bodies, less, like, there's no decline. There's no Jakobsen. So then their lead outs are not there as well. Although there's just less bodies involved. But yeah, second win in the week for Koi, second place for Pedersen. But it does get him into the green jersey on stage placements on points. Ahead of Piffy, who finished, I should have a full top 10. Koi wins ahead of Pedersen. Ackermann third, Bennett fourth. Probably they'd be quite happy with that result.
Yeah.
Van Poppel fifth, Lund Andersen sixth, Trentin seventh, then Piffy, Mikkels, and Rajovic. Demar 14th. And I thought JK were going for Mezgets. Groenewegen was in the bunch. He finishes 18th, Cocard 19th. So that's disappointing, I guess.
I want to add two more things. When it comes to the sprint, you mentioned him, Sam Bennett. Felt like he had a solid sprint today. Yeah. Specifically rewatched the sprint to see what Bennett was doing to get fourth, because I was curious to see if he improved or not. And his he fought for his position quite well. Then he opens up next to Van Poppel, beats him in the end, but he's also already sitting down, sprinting with about 100 meters to go, 80 meters to go. So it's not like he had remotely enough to even be considered competing for the stage here. So he's got quite a bit to go to compete for a stage win, but he's at least looking better than a few other sprints we've seen him in lately. So that's
his fitness looks okay. Like his fitness must be okay to be getting to this finish in good position. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like he actually, it's not like he's dropping with Jakobsen.
It's as if he burns during the lead out and then misses that X amount to be there in the actual last part of the sprint is what I feel like the last few days. And when it comes to GC, got to mention that. We have Luke Plapp still in the lead. Still Buitrago second on 13 seconds. McNulty third on 27 seconds. Then Almeida on 29 and Evenepoel on 30. So exact same thing. But about Luke Plapp's positioning, a lot of people are like panicking about Luke Plapp's positioning in this stage. And I'll be honest, I didn't even mind it. Like he's sitting near the back of the group. Either he sits at the front with his team getting him in position, but they're all working to get Groenewegen a stage win. So they don't have those riders anymore. Yeah. So he has to do it himself. And if he has to position himself at the front, the likelihood of crashing by moving up somewhere is notable. And in the middle of the pack, quite dangerous too. So I'd rather have him sit at the back, risk being caught behind. But the opposite to that is that the likelihood of crashing is so much less, I feel like.
Yeah, and it's, you can come back from a split there as well. And I just don't change what you've been doing all week just because you're now in the yellow jersey. And realistically, yep, he's not the race favorite either. It's not like Remco or Vingegaard in Tirreno or in the Tour where it's like, no, you can't sit there. Because also, like, if Vingegaard, if Pogs or Vingegaard sit there all the way through the Tour, like if I see Pog, right, sitting there all day coming into that final hill, the word's going to go out that you need to smash the hill to split it. Whereas no one's going to do that for Plapp in Paris-Nice. So I think the risk, and vice versa, like that happens all the time. So yeah, I don't have a problem with it. Basically, I agree. Tomorrow's stage, I think it looks like rain is forecast in Nice. I don't know about the climbs because they do go up to 1,000 meters when they come south of Sisteron, but let's hope the stage goes ahead. I haven't checked in the middle of the stage closely. 6Ks. So it's very similar to the start. False flat uphill, first 60Ks, then 6.7Ks, 5%. Descent. Then 7Ks, 4.6%, short descent, and then another kicker up to the 1,100 meters. And then it's like a ridge line. It might be quite cold up there. 1,100 meters with the rain could be quite cold tomorrow. Then they got a step descent, then 6Ks, 4% halfway down, then a longer descent, and then they're on the coast in Nice. But before they get quite there, they do a really difficult climb. Well, they go through the finish line first, and then they do La Colle sur Loup. 1.8Ks, 10.3%. The hardest hill in the race so far. The first 800 meters of this, the first 1.2 kilometers of this average about 12%, including a 400-meter section at 15%. And, then it, like, levels off, but sort of still goes uphill with like an 800 meter 8% kicker where the intermediate sprint for 6.42 is, then a steady descent before a little kicker finish the base of the climb they do after the first repetition of the finish line. I think we have to see action on that Cat 2, that final Cat 2, Benji.
Fully agree. The only question I have when it comes to the stage is who's going to control the breakaway here, because I fully see abilities for a Remco to attack, for a Roglic, if he feels a bit better, to do something on that climb, for UAE to perhaps be exposed by one of two riders, because Almeida, not sure this climb is ideal for him. McNulty, it's okay, but not perfect either. I'd expect a longer climb to be a bit more preferable for that man. And then the question is, Luke Plapp, Jayco shouldn't be controlling this day. They should keep their guys, only if it's like the dangerous breakaway. Breakaway formation, make sure no one dangerous goes in the breakaway. And if there's a dangerous breakaway for GC, and at least controlling is how I see Jayco. But there's a large chance that Breakaway won't be dangerous for GC. So I'm then looking at opportunists from actual GC teams, and will Quickstep ride at the front the entire day for this stage? Will Bora ride at the front to have like a slightly uphill sprint towards the end? Skjelmose is my pick for this stage, but that's only if GC goes to the finish line. And then, do you see possibilities for a Breakaway to win?
Yes and no. Like, I agree. Like, yesterday we saw Bora try all day, right? And it didn't work out. So you would think, logically, they might not try all day tomorrow. Although, if you want to win the race, you have to try.
Yeah.
But Quickstep didn't try fully yesterday. But then, have they now seen something from Roglic and Remco that it is a good idea to try tomorrow? So I can't predict it. I don't know what these teams are going to do. I really don't. Like, I can't tell whether, like, UAE will be defensive, but I don't know which of Bora or Quickstep will be aggressive. And I think you're right. I think Trek have to do something. This is the stage of the next 3 days that I think suits Skjelmose the best. They've gone all in for Pedersen, and he's a shitload of time back. He's on 127 in 19th on GC. It's time to start moving up. He's clearly got better legs than that. And yeah, but for starters, I'm looking at this stage and I'm looking at Almeida and I'm thinking, you can get rid of that guy here. No problem. It's going to be
bigger.
The descent into that finish line first rep, then bang straight up. It's going to kick off because of the bonies. Yeah, you can split it there. So I think Trek got to go and try.
Yeah.
Gull looks really good as well.
There too. Like, what, sorry?
Oh, I think Felix Gull looks really good. But yeah, Quickstep will pull there, but you're sort of saying, who's going to pull in the first 2 hours?
Yeah, because like, if the break has 7 minutes, then the break wins. So who's going to control that? That's where I'm stuck. We need someone to step up.
I would do it if I was Trek still.
Yeah, I would actually consider it too, to be honest.
Yeah. I wouldn't if I was Jayco. To be honest, like, it's not. I mean, you could pull one rider,
mate,
but
yeah. The cleric's here anyway. Use him.
Yep, for sure. Who you got?
I've got Skjelmose. It's him or Remco in my head.
I like Ewan Kostio again for this day, but he's 2 minutes behind, which is very annoying. Like, he's going to lose way more time, and he's not going to be allowed in the break tomorrow because of it. So I think that's quite annoying, because he definitely could win this stage from the breakaway. Zimmerman's on 4:23. Izaguirre's on 3:21. Is too close. Like, he's an annoying guy to have in the breakaway.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Quentin Pecher.
Bilbao descent is also pops in my head. But Pecher from the break, I see it.
I don't think the descent's that fast.
Skjelmose v Remco, I see at the finish line, is what I'm hoping for, because I like GC fights for the win. So I want that. I'm going to talk it into existence. And I think that's about it when it comes to our Paranese predictions. Brings us towards
GC. I think a group of three or four GC riders do go to the finish.
Yeah.
And they go clear on that hill with 12Ks to go or before. Remco for sure will go clear. Skjelmose should be there. Jorgensen looked good yesterday. And then Roglic depends on his positioning. And McNulty actually looked pretty good today. But so it could be him. But I think it's definitely going to be Remco and Skjelmose. And Santi's the wild card as well. So, but you've got to put time into people. So
Flappy's fucked.
You reckon they'll hit him on the steep section? Because the problem is for him, if he doesn't enter in good position into that hill, and it's going to kick off immediately steep and split, and you're basically not even at the corner yet, because of the peloton, you're fucked. Like, you immediately lose 15 seconds.
The strategy is get into Vervaeke's wheel, and there's a chance he rides you into a breakaway.
Yeah, always possible. hopefully the final should be good. Okay, as you said, on to Tirreno Adriatico.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Another very, very similar stage. Stage 4, 207Ks. Cool day. We did have a 17K 5% climb in the first 70 kilometers. With also a false summit. They did a 5K 5% climb, a 4.5% climb after that. Then a long sort of descent, rolling hills, nothing too serious, before the final 18 kilometers, which included a 2.7K 4% climb, a sort of a ridgeline, which is quite pretty actually, and then a step descent with actual descending flat, then actual descending again, and then the finish kind of kicked up a bit. Not too much. I thought at all. Like I always thought, if it comes to the finish, it'll be a full group sprint. But we had a strong break here, Benji. Again,
wow.
Not numerous, but the guys in it were pretty strong.
Relatively, I'd say Mirko Maestri and Davide Baez from Polti once again. Baez ending up taking the KOM points, so leading the KOM classification after the stage. If my memory serves me right. Jonas Abrahamsen from UnoX, another Italian in Alex Stolio from Bardiani, and Alexander Kamp, like you said, also a good rider, and Tudor Pro Cycling. So that's our five-man breakaway in this stage. UAE is controlling the gap for leader Ayuso behind in the peloton. Just nothing crazy, just controlling the gap, making sure they're not getting 17 decades. And one by one, the breakaway riders get dropping because I felt like the stage was harder than I imagined after the initial climb. Because there seemingly were false flat uphill segments when I was watching TV where people started dropping. For example, in the breakaway, we were left over with Kamp, Abrahamsen, and Maestri. And in the peloton, Cavendish dropping with 67k to go, then coming back, then dropping with 53k to go. Then Merlier dropping before the end of the stage as well with about 15k to go. And the gap with the breakaway was never at a point where I felt like, okay, this breakaway is super dangerous. Seems like it's within reach, but then Domestique started lacking, I felt like, in the peloton behind, and I felt like the stage gave a weird vibe where I ended up being shocked at how long the breakaway stayed ahead.
I think it's just people are tired behind. I couldn't figure out. It seemed like every team decided, actually, yeah, maybe we'll start giving it a bit of a chase. You know, like, because I think a lot of sprinters probably went on the radio like Merlier, like, actually guys, not today. Chill out. And a lot of that was going on as well. Like, oh, I'm not sure I feel so good. Even guys who were there at the end, a lot of the time during stages, I know riders who've literally during the stage, they're like, I feel terrible. I don't have it. No, let's not go for me. And then they end up winning the stage. So it could even be those teams. Like Alpecin weren't always there either. And but it did look like the break was pretty well in hand with just Kamp, Abrahamsen, and Maestri. But they're strong guys. Like Maestri's a decent like Conti sprinter. Abrahamsen's a truck. Kamp is one, not one, but like come top five in Amstel or something. Although you never know what level he'll be at. And then on the little climb, that 3K 4% one, EF start pacing Benji. And yesterday for Bettiol, I get it, but today, I think. I looked at this finish and I think a lot of directors looked at it very differently because it, like, I was like, this is a flat finish pretty much. This is a 60 kilometer hour plus finish. It's a 3.5% climb. I was like, you're not going to, Bettiol, this ain't for him.
Yeah, Bettiol, it ain't for him. Even with Pidcock, I was doubting it. I don't mind necessarily seeing a quick step, going to the front and trying with Alaphilippe, knowing their sprinter was already gone. Then you might as well try something. But to actively start chasing for a rider, I was like, okay, these riders don't have the biggest chance of winning this. And with about, I'd say, 5K to go, well, 10K to go, Arendsman Mechanical then eventually comes back. And between that time, Little Trek was really one of the teams that was pulling most between 10 and 5K to go. And after that, it seemingly switched towards
Ineos. But on the point with Arendsman.
Go ahead.
They dropped Connor Swift back. He waited. Yep. Tried to give his bike to Arendsman. They are the same size. And Arendsman said no. So maybe they have a different pedal configuration. That's the only explanation I could see. But then Connor Swift's out. You lost a guy. So whatever plan you had, you've sacrificed a strong rider for this finish to help Arendsman come back, who's going to come back in the cars anyway.
True. In your spacing, with about 4K to go.
Not for Ghana either.
You're right. Not for Ghana, but for Pidcock. And I kind of feel like Ineos forgot about Ghana sprinting again, because the man could sprint properly last year on finishes like this. So
I think he's not in good shape.
Probably the case, because in moments where we expected him to be there, and even in time trials, he kind of disappointed. So I believe that's a viable explanation. Then Alpecin was the interesting one for me. While Ineos pacing with 4K to go, it's Alpecin in P15 roughly, with our four riders in a row with Philipsen there. So they're one of the teams we have seen the least at this point.
Yeah.
I felt like. Which, credits to them for being able to hide and having all the teams do the work for them, even though they have on paper the fastest sprinter in the world in their team. For the stage, depends on how you look at the finish line. Then we enter the last 2 kilometers, and we're going into that climbing segment towards the line, and Anthony Marche pops to the front. With Benjamin P5, roughly, they had P3. Two Dom Mystiques in front of him.
Turnison first. You're right. They had two Doms.
Yeah. And I felt like some other team members suddenly shoved in between from other teams. And that's why I said roughly P5. But it ended up becoming a lead out by the Intermarché rider into the final 700 meters. Might have been Turnison, like you mentioned. Then Pidcock goes into P2. Binyam is in P3. Alaphilippe's in P4. And I'm like, mate, this feels like 2021 Tirreno Adriatico kind of finish that we spoke about yesterday. But then the sprinters arrive. P5, Philipsen. P6, Milan. And we've spoken about this peloton for a while, but in the last 5 kilometers, Abrahamsen was basically caught with 2 kilometers to go, together with the other guys from the breakaway, with Cam Maestri. And Cam does his last little pull around the corner and then drops off, because he sees the peloton like 25 meters behind. Maestri's like, okay, I'm done as well. And Abrahamsen just keeps bloody well going. And throughout the entire lead out, Abrahamsen is actually kind of gaining more ground. He's like 30 meters ahead, 35. And man, I was like, this could actually happen.
It looked like it was going to happen. And I thought it was going to happen at a point, because it's a proper climb. All the sprinters, maybe not Milan, but Philipsen for sure, are on the limit. It's a proper climb. The Intermarché guy, he is done. He's like going nowhere on the front, and Abrahamsen's gaining time on him. And I'm thinking, Peacock's got to go here on the uphill, because Philipsen, I'm not sure, is going to be able to respond right at this moment on the uphill when they're all lined out. If they want it, like, I presume that's what they were trying to try, because the flat sprint, he's not going to win against these guys. And then, yeah, the gap looked good for Abrahamsen. Intermarché pull off. Peacock's left on the front 500 meters to go. It now levels off. It's flat-ish. And Peacock sort of stops, as he should. He's like, well, I'm not going to just chase Abrahamsen down. Initially, the guy's looking at him in the wheel. Alpecin, I think, still had a lead out for Philipsen.
No.
And they... No? Okay.
The last lead out dropped Philipsen off in that P5.
Okay. And no one's jumping. No one's moving. Abrahamsen's still there. He looks like he's grinding 65 cadence, but he's still moving at a decent rate of knots. And then eventually Pidcock jumps with like 400 meters to go, leads out the whole bunch with Binnie, Philipsen, Milan in his wheel. And Philipsen comes out of the wheel to the right barrier, Binnie to the left barrier, Milan tracks Philipsen to the right barrier, comes back left to the middle. Binnie swings across trying to get Philipsen's draft. Milan gives him the big don't argue, squeezes through. And seated with that tracky power, wins this sort of strange sprint. Ahead of Philipsen, Corbin Strong flash late for third, Binnie fourth, Zangler fifth, Meyerhofer sixth, Abrahamsen holds on for seventh, Garcia Cortina eighth, Alaphilippe ninth, Tiberi tenth, Vingegaard 11th, what the hell? ahead of Velasco, and then Paris, and then Pidcock ends up 15th. So Pidcock kind of gave it to the sprinters, I think. So I think... he won't be on UNOX Christmas card list after this.
Yeah, man. If Pidcock doesn't do that with 4 meters to go, Abrahamsen wins the stage.
Yeah, I think
so. My view of this. And Pidcock after the stage said something along the lines of, I probably should have gone when the Intermarché guy went to the front, like you mentioned. So he realized it, but in the moment he made a decision not to do that and then react a bit later, which wasn't the ideal situation. But hey, it's a high-stress situation. Decision at that point, then it cost him when he comes to the stage, even though I didn't see him as the ultimate chance to win here in the first place there. So it was going to be for like a podium.
At 500 meters to go, he can't win.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's no harm done, at least except to Abra Hansen.
Sticks into Abra Hansen. He's like, I ain't winning, so you need him, my friend.
And that's why I mentioned Connor Swift. Remember I mentioned him 5 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Could he have been there in to pull Abra Hansen back? Certainly would have helped.
Could Adams have been there?
Well, I mean, you can't stop having the puncture, but you cannot. Like, I don't agree. I don't agree with it. If you're going to pay Peacock all this money, big contract, and go for the GC project and take time and try to do something for him, I'm sorry, but Aaronsman can come back in the cars. Swift is. If you want to execute the plan, we're not going to take Swift out of the plan to help a guy come eighth in GC.
Yep.
Anyway. Milan, because he wins the stage, takes 10 bonies and goes actually ahead of Ayuso on GC. I dare say UAE might be quite happy with that, actually, because now Trek out of the jersey. He's on 4 seconds. Ayuso is. Volkanar still there in third on 18 seconds. Tiberi on 21 seconds. Vingegaard 26. Gregoire 26. Hindley 28. Paulus 30 with Poole, Kemner, Bjerg. Then Martinez, Aaronsman on 31. Bock is on 34. Chef is on 35 with Caruso.
Whenever you say Bock, my dude, I'm like, who the fuck's Bock?
Oh, Ben O'Connor. Bock. Tomorrow's stage, we actually been crying out for some GC action. We'll have it in Paris tomorrow. And by the way, in Paris, do you see Turner's interview?
I did not. The one before the stage?
Yeah. He wanted to go on that breakaway.
For sure.
The interview was like, you get a chance today. He's like, I'd love to. Two rulers who were basically look like my uncle went to the line in 2018. He didn't say that. I'm filling that in. Pollard. no, we can't do that. So anyway, free Ben Turner, I say.
Hey, still without a single Wilter win?
Really? Has he won a race?
I mean, I'm talking about the team this year.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Turner won something last year, right?
He won Murcia.
That shady finish?
The Murcia finish.
Yeah.
Tomorrow stage from Torricella Sicura to Valle Castellana, 144 Ks, and it is the first GC stage, one would think short, but pretty much no flat throughout the whole stage. Like even uphill at a neutral, first 4Ks got a little hill. Then we got 5.5Ks, 5%. 7.7Ks, 4.5%. 5Ks, 5%. 5Ks, 5%. Like all those climbs. And they don't look like much on the parkour, actually. And then a descent. Short one before the San Giacomo climb. 12Ks, 6.2%. It's pretty regular. It gets a little bit harder from 7 to 10Ks in, and then it levels off and it averages 5% the last 3Ks. So pretty gradual, gets a bit harder, nothing, no ramp bus or anything like that. And that's 24Ks from the finish, that crest, and then descent of about 17 kilometers, no less, sorry, 13 kilometers. And then another pickup, 2.1Ks, 5%, before a false flat drag to the line. And then it even kicks up at the finish line, I think. It's like, it is an uphill finish. So, an interesting stage, Benji. Very interesting stage.
Interesting stage. I will say, on paper, if Vingegaard wins, he drops everybody on that climb. But...
Is it that hard?
But I've got a challenge for Jonas. Jonas, if you're listening, at the foot of the climb... Put yourself to the side of the road, wait 2.5 minutes, and then start riding. And your comeback towards the front of the peloton will be bloody epic. So that's what I want to see.
I think you're underrating some of the competitors here. 12K, 6% in a one-week race. Danny Martinez shouldn't just, you're not going to insta-drop. All due respect to Jonas, but who do you have in his wheel in Camino when he attacked? Not...
Godi.
No. With Bernal and there was another guy. Ombardiani or something. Or Caja. I'm just saying on 5 and 6%.
From Caja.
He's actually good.
He's actually good.
No, I'm just saying on 5 and 6%, the draft benefit is massive. They go 30 kilometers an hour. So Danny Martinez is in some scrub. Peacock's a good rider. You got Hindley, like, as well. So it's not just a formality to drop them on 6%, although it does get a little bit more difficult later on. It's the interesting thing to me, Benji, is if I think someone's going to try tomorrow, but then that descent and then that kicker. Because if there's no Domestiques left and then you got that kicker within the last 10Ks to the finish, and it is like a, you know, it's over 5% in paths. Can we see a Leonard Kamna trying to attack there? If you got Hindley and Martinez in the group, Kamna goes to put your Visma Lab under pressure.
I am pro Ayuso for this stage.
Oh, yeah.
And that counters exactly everything I said about Vingegaard, because I believe Ayuso can follow Vingegaard on this club.
I'm actually less convinced of that.
Really?
Yeah, the flat TT was almost too good.
He's too strong for the flat TTs, the shorter reference.
If he's done that flat TT of 65 kilos, 64 kilos, then yeah, he should win GC here, because the power he must be doing, even on a relative basis, must be extremely high.
Who's controlling the breakaway here?
Visma Lab just lost Hessink in the crash.
Yeah.
So there's your controller gone. You know what? If I was Bahrain, I'd go for the stage win with Tiberi.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Tiberi's really quick. He's really, really quick.
I don't know. I don't see it.
I think Bahrain will try something. They've got Caruso try.
You're on your
descent.
Cat killer train this week, right? You've Tiberi's mentioned Tiberi for every stage. Podium.
Okay, he's shot a cat, but he's a good rider.
He's good. 100%. I agree. He's a good climber. He's a good TTer. He's going to win a Grand Tour stage this year. That's fair. Yeah. But winning the sprint in that group against the Ayuso and so forth?
Yeah, you can do it.
I don't see it necessarily.
I think it'd be an interesting stage. I don't quite exactly know what will happen, to be honest. I mean, should Ineos not control for Pidcock?
Well,
shut it down.
About that.
Can't Pidcock, if you go for the fucking finish today, I mean, shouldn't you go for it tomorrow?
Yeah, on paper, tomorrow really fits. But then again, I'd still take a user over Pidcock in that sprint at the end.
No way. You're overrating.
I'm not sure about that, man.
So
Ayuso's sprint is there.
Some Italian university student in Laguelia rode away from him in you know, on Jayco in Wednesday.
Wow. No, he bridged to everybody.
Ayuso's... yeah, he bridged. His 5-minute power is really good. I know. Ayuso's sprint is really good. It is really good, but I think Peacock should be better than... You'd think better than him on a little... I mean, okay, let's say it's 50-50. I'd still give it a crack. Ineos.
Yeah, for sure.
But and you can take time on Jonas, because then if you got Tiberi, Ayuso, and Peacock at the finish, then you could take a full 10 delta to Vingegaard.
Kwiatkowski break? Well, they'll never do it.
No, I wouldn't do that. No, I would. If you're not going to go for Peacock on this sort of stage, then. but probably Benji's right that if you know Vingegaard, the last 2 years just doesn't miss an opportunity.
Yeah, mate, but this entire time we've spoken about this, but I still haven't heard about who will actually be controlling the peloton in this day. I really don't know.
I said Ineos.
Oh, well.
They
if
got
they
Ro.
Do that.
They got Ro, sure. Ganna. Yeah. They got the team to do it. Ganna can control and Ro. They should.
Possible.
But yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting stage. Like, does Vingegaard just ride away from everybody? Does someone like Gegen Hart win the uphill sprint? He's actually quite good in them. They got a good team with Schoens.
Can you put satellite riders up there, knowing that after the climb you could use one on the uphill drag to the finish line?
Yep. You know who's just a completely peculiar rider? Andrea Baggioli. This guy I cannot figure out. Like,
this is his stage on paper.
But, well, no, you look at Lombardi last year, right? makes that group. It's a 25-minute climb with Poggi and co, like the top guys going ham after, you know, a hard day. And then
no consistency.
Tomorrow he'll be like nowhere. He'll get it's like, what? It's a 12K 6% climb. Like, it makes no sense. He came second in Lombardy last year, following on Vasco da Gama. Like,
isn't Velasco okay quick?
Oh yeah, but the GC guys, someone's gonna go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Baggioli's like 63 kilos. Like, I don't know.
Just thinking about brake riders, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh, because no one controls at all.
I don't know where he is in GC though, so he might actually be too close.
I'm gonna go with Ben Healy attacking on the 5% kicker, and he wins by 5 seconds from the GC group.
I'm going to go with Kevin Vauquelin bringing France triumph.
Vauque looks so good too.
Grégoire's here as well, eh?
I'm worried Vauque's like 74 kilos.
It would make sense.
The third Grégoire's in the sprint here, yesterday, mate. I was like, excuse me? Oh, true, Grégoire, he's cracked. Oh,
what a polar bear doing in Arlington, Texas.
Yeah, I know. It's like, what? But yeah, okay. They've got lots of options. Can't wait to watch. Hope you enjoyed this pod. We'll see you with the recap of hopefully some good GC action in both stages tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.